sitting on a bucket with a fishing pole. I'm dropping a line through an icy hole. I know you're down there. I know you're down there. I know you're down there.
Welcome to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio with Mike Moropoulos. And we have Jason Grubb on the line, who is a guide. He's a fly fishing expert. But if you want to just learn how to fish anywhere in any type of format, you know, he doesn't mind, you know, pulling out a spinning reel if that's what you need to do to catch fish. But I enjoy having Jason on because he's so versatile. And let's go ahead and jump into it. Jason, welcome to Fish Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, why don't we kind of start off with, let's kind of mention the fact that it's summertime. It's a time for families to take vacations. And we're in a weather, maybe you can probably mention different parts of the world. But, you know, one of the things that that we might talk about today is instead of having the dad taking the kids out fishing, how about if we have the kids take the dad out?
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty darn good idea, but this is a good time of year to be on the water just in general, whether it's freshwater, saltwater, lakes, rivers. You know, fishing's pretty good just about anywhere you go, and especially here in the West Coast on my lakes. We're in post-spawn now for the bass fishing, and just to give you an example, like this morning I took a client out fly fishing for largemouth bass. We did 45 fish all on topwater. We had close to 3.5 hours of topwater fishing. For who doesn't understand what topwater fishing is, it's one of the most exciting ways to catch bass. It's actually when the bass come to the surface to feed and eat your bait. And we were on fly rod using both damsel fly patterns and frog patterns. And these fish were so aggressive this morning, crashing on the bait, coming 2 feet out of the water as they took it. We just couldn't set the hook fast enough and landed about 45 bass. Biggest one went close to 5 pounds. Wow. So I had a happy client this morning.
Jason, this is Mike. You're a guide, and, of course, I'm familiar with LSL. I'm trying to picture you guys out there with these fish crashing around on my mind. Tell me something about bass fishing. Are bass? I mean, can you do the same thing, say, if you were down in a little lake in Texas fishing for bass or up in Minnesota?
Sure. It's going to vary a little bit with the different strains of bass, depending on, you know, what are in that particular body of water. There's lots of different types of bass, from Florida strain bass. Those are the ones that grow to be huge, and they're just, you know, they're eating the rainbow trout and basically eating anything they can fit into their mouth. From northern strain bass is what we were catching this morning, which don't grow to be the giant pigs, but they're an extremely aggressive strain of bass. So yeah, it can be a lot of fun to catch.
But basically, you're throwing the same stuff. You could go back there yourself and use what you have in your tackle box and do well on bass.
Oh, you bet. Yeah. Because the general, you know, the different foods that they're feeding on in lakes and ponds are very similar, from frogs to dragonflies to crayfish to the bait fish that is in that particular body of water. So it does help to match the colors, and you know, the bait fish is important to match that type of pattern. But, yeah, the flies in general are pretty the same once you start to learn them and learn how to present them to the fish. And the important part is knowing habitats this time of year. Like, this time of year is when there's good top water right up on the surface. In the wintertime, the fish are a little deeper, so you got to go down for them, and you're not really getting good top water. So you start to learn those different aspects.
Now, do you get people, you were fly fishing, do you get people who are beginners as far as pitching a fly on your trips, where you kind of educate them and work with them on the cast, that type of thing, too?
Oh, yeah. It varies every trip, you know, and I've been doing this almost 15 years, so I've seen every level of angler possible, and you do have to run your trips a little differently with the skill level. Take, for example, really big bass flies are difficult to cast. The heavier the fly, the harder it is to get it out there. It's more wind resistant. Oh. It's a little heavier. So when I have a less experienced fly fisherman, I usually tone the flies down to be a little bit smaller for them to be able to handle it better. Hmm. When I get an expert out there, I can throw the bigger stuff and go for the bigger fish and really have more versatility with what patterns I'm throwing at these fish.
Well, Jason, a quick question for you. I know fly fishing can intimidate some people, but it doesn't have to be too complicated. Give us kind of some basic ideas, if you are interested in getting involved in it, about, you know, maybe you should, you know, how far do you have to throw a fly to be able to catch fish? And should you pick the surroundings to make it easier? Obviously, if you're on a bank and there's shrub around you, you've got a roll cast. But, you know, give an idea for people that are interested in getting involved in it, maybe some tips.
Well, the first and most important tip is just get out there and do it. You can't mm-hmm. get better at it unless you get out there. And, yeah, it can be a little intimidating learning the different casting aspects and trying to get into it. But, you know, the easiest way, of course, in the beginning is trying to find a good instructor. And usually any fly shop, lodge, outfitter, and just general guides are going to help you through that and step through the process. And I've been doing that for 15 years. One of my specialties is helping people get into the sport and getting them going, getting their equipment, getting them casting and getting them out there. But with bass fishing, you know, the cast doesn't have to be real, real far. And in general, with fly fishing freshwater, the casts are not very far. With trout fishing in a river, you're catching those fish right in front of you at your feet.
Mm-hmm.
With bass fishing, the average cast is probably 30 feet, maybe 40.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think you'd ever really go over 50 feet. You don't need to.
Right.
So, no, it's not that hard. Now, with right. bass fishing, the bigger flies can be a little tough,
mm-hmm.
but you just go to smaller flies when you're starting out and get out there and start catching fish.
Well, you know, what you mentioned or what you said just kind of reminds me of a story for some years ago. I was in the Kenai and had some waders on, and we were wading around in like 18 inches, 2 feet of water with a fly rod. And all it was a piece of orange yarn on the end. And we're, you know, looking for salmon, mostly silvers. And it didn't make any difference because sometimes you catch them right between your legs.
They're right there.
Yeah,
they're right there.
Yeah.
We were on the surf the other day catching halibut, and these fish were 10, 15 feet in front of us. They were chasing our fly right off to the tip of the rod. And I'm telling my client, he's tripping, don't stop. And they're coming right up to the rod. You just never know.
Well, Jason, I guess the point is that there's easier ways to do it than others, depending on your level of expertise. And just like anything else, I mean, if you're playing golf or playing a game, the more you do it, the better you get, the more fun it becomes.
I bet.
You know, Jason, one of the things I feel strongly about is hiring a guide. If I were to take a trip back someplace and I wanted to go bass fishing for a few days, maybe 3 or 4 days, the first thing I'd do is hire somebody like Jason Grubb.
At least for the first day.
For the first day. Mm-hmm. I just think that you learn so much and you waste so little time going out with somebody that's good. And, boy, it just makes all the difference.
You know,
the world.
Mike, and also for some reason, I'm not really sure why, you'd think it'd be universal, but every locale, every stream, every waterway, it seems to have its unique, some things work better than others, and you don't know that till you get there because, you know, if red works on one place, maybe it won't work somewhere else. Would you comment on that, Jason?
Yeah, you know, I've been a guide for almost 20 years, and when I go to particular places, I hire a guide. Even being a guide. And there's reasons behind that. We're out on that water every single day. I'm on my lake 5, 6, 7 days a week. We know what's going on. We know where the fish are. We know how they're feeding. We know what colors those particular fish want on that body of water.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I go down to Mexico bass fishing, we fish lakes down there. I'm with a guide. Absolutely.
Jason, before we let you go, I didn't mean to cut you short, but before we let you go, let's get some contact information because we're running out of time.
Sure. My website is breakwatertours.com, and my phone number is 805-698-2879. But if you go onto my website, breakwatertours.com, it lays out all the different trips that I offer Mexico to Brazil to Alaska to California.
Let's go fishing. Thank you, Jason. Breakwatertours.com. Great, great, great. Thank you. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio.
Lake Cochuma is a California treasure. Bald eagles, deer, egrets, foxes, wild turkeys play on the banks and in the trees. Red ear, bluegill, bass, and catfish inhabit the waters. Rainbow trout are planted on a regular basis and easily caught from boat or shore. Lake Cochuma Boat Rentals is a key to a successful day on the lake. Call 805-688-4040 for information. Tackle, skiff, or pontoon boat rental. Call Craig at 688-4040. 20 minutes north of Santa Barbara, Cochuma Boat Rentals for a day to remember.
Strike baits catch more fish. Formulated from years of research and development, our dough baits trigger the instincts of fish to strike. Packaged to eliminate air that drives the bait out, the tube means you never have to put your finger in the bait. One squeeze loads your hook with state-of-the-art attractants for even the most elusive trout. Engineered and made in the USA, visit strikebaits.com. Strike baits, the next generation of trout baits.
Bad day fishing is better than a good day at work. Bad day fishing just better than
Welcome to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio. Our co-host today is the coach, Mike Moropoulos, and we're glad to see him here. And we have on the line with us right now, we have Terrence from the original Sport Fishing Report 976 Tuna. Yeah, Terrence is on the line with us, and we're going to kind of cover a little bit about the West Coast and maybe talk about something else. Terrence, thanks for coming on to Fish Talk Radio.
Great to be with you, John, and we'll just kind of get right into it. First and foremost, we've had a fantastic fishing here in Southern California as of late with the influx of yellowtail that we talked about last week. It's basically all the way from Ensenada, offshore, along the coast, all the way up into the Channel Islands, and everybody getting a little piece of it. Johnny Woodrum over at Catalina Island on the Pursuit this morning, already up over 40 yellowtail for the three-quarter-day boats. The half-day guys and whatnot are getting a little piece of it, traveling back and forth between Barracuda and sand bass. So really good conditions inshore-wise, offshore-wise. The islands are biting with white sea bass. There's white sea bass up in the Channel Islands. The long-range guys are still getting in some big bluefin tuna, and some yellowfin tuna is crawling up the line. We should see possibly some of that start happening offshore for our day-and-a-half to two-day boats. But I think the biggest story that we've been talking about off the air is this Mako shark that's been caught. They caught a 1,323-pound Mako shark recently off Huntington Beach, and, pretty dang big shark. I know a lot of anglers are disappointed in the fact that they took that out of the water, being an apex predator, and we have a severe seal problem going on right now in Southern California. Mm.
You know, I hadn't thought about that aspect of it, but it's true. Now, Makos are definitely a sport fish, and you find them off California, and they fish for them in Mexico, and they can be a lot of fun, and they, you know, they taste pretty good. But we're reaching a point that we have to start being a little bit more selective. Now, white sea bass, I think everybody, no, excuse me, great white sharks, white sea bass don't get as big. Great white sharks are protected, and for good reason. And what you're talking about is that, you know, they're pretty much at the top of the food chain, and they do help control the population of some of the other marine mammals that we don't want to overrun us. But we never think about a 1,300-pound Mako, and you said that you've had experienced a Mako chasing a great white?
Yeah, there's been several occasions where at Guadalupe Island, which is a typical location for divers and sport fishermen alike to go visit. It's a majestic island that's offshore of Mexico. It's kind of like going to the island that never was. When you pull up to it, you're really surprised. And the great whites frequent there like they do the Farallones up in San Francisco. There has been many occasions when there's been 14 to 16 foot great whites and greater, 18 to 20 foot over there. But there'll be 12 to 15 foot to 16 foot Makos that'll chase the great whites off of the dive spots and the fishing spots, and basically claim the food that's in that territory. So you're talking about the top of the food chain. Great white sharks commonly are attacked by killer whales. there's no record of Mako sort of doing that. So, I mean, if you're kind of doing the Superman, Batman sort of comparison, what's the biggest of the baddest of, out in the ocean? Great whites are pretty much on the top, or excuse me, Makos are on the top of my list.
Wow.
You know, John and Terrence, this is Mike. I knew about white sharks and how they're protected, and we've got pups and all the sharks thing. But frankly, when this catch was made, I was surprised that these fish were considered evidently so common by the Fish and Wildlife that the limit, you know, it's sport fishing limit, it's not protected very. I was really surprised at that. I don't know much about Makos, tell you the truth, or whites, but I was surprised at the fact that they're out there to be taken.
I don't necessarily think that the sport boat anglers do a tremendous amount of damage or anything to the ecosystem of the Makos. Some of the commercial take practices definitely do. You know, we would like to see the smaller fish being taken for consumption. This food, this fish, for as far as I know, is not being used for consumption. It's actually going to be it's been donated for scientific purposes. But unfortunately, the guy who was out there, who really wanted the catch, I guess I'm not in his shoes, so I can't judge him. But if I were him, and I had a couple guys from Texas, and I would have caught that fish, I definitely would have sent it back. It looked like it had a seal in its belly.
Yeah.
You know, taking them for sport fishing. And then they catch a big one like that. I wonder if considering it as a possible world record had anything to do with keeping it, getting it on the scales.
Oh, sure. Vanity plays a part in everyday society, yeah. Always.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I can have a trophy and say I'm the best, but we all know as fishermen, every day is different out on the water. Tom might be the best today. You might be the best tomorrow. I could be the best over the weekend, and we could all have crappy days on Monday.
I know about those. But, no, that is interesting. And just to kind of follow the, you know, the line a little bit is that the, you know, Makos, they are fun to catch. And, you know, as far as for sharks go, they do taste pretty good. I mean, they're still a shark. They excrete through their skin. And you got to be, you know, you got to treat them right and eat them quickly, and they can be very, very good. And they're a lot of fun to catch. I had no idea that they could get that big, though. That was, what, 12, 13 feet and 1,300 pounds? Man, I don't, that would kind of rival, well, I guess great whites can, they've seen them up to closer to 2,000. But 1,300-pound shark, that's huge. I don't know how old it would be. How long it would take to get there, but I suspect it'd be, you know, certainly more than decades.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, we have a seal problem down here, and it's not necessarily a problem with the population of seals being so low. It's that it's so great. We saw early on in the season where a lot of adults were abandoning their pups because bait was offshore, and these pups were inshore, and basically they started to wither away, and then you have the environmental groups that come in and save these pups. When basically nature's kind of playing its course, the ecosystem can only support a certain amount of seal population in this area, and with protection and basically the run of the Pacific right now that they have, it's gotten a little bit out of hand. We're hearing about them on the Barracuda grounds. We're hearing about them on the white sea bass grounds. We're hearing about them on the yellowtail grounds. You finally get a bite, you finally set up on some conditions, and then you get a 1,300-pound knothead that's going to sit underneath the boat, wait for you to catch the fish, do all the work. Once you start bring it up next to the coast of the boat, he's going to rip it off your line and have a free meal.
Well, you know, Terrence, you mentioned something, too, that I noticed, that I'll bet the marine biologists are salivating about a chance to take a look at that shark. You know, apply their scientific backgrounds to that fish.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to learn a lot from that fish. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, again, that's how many of those big, you know, mamas are out there?
Right. Hey, Terrence, you know, I've been having so much fun, I forgot we've got Tawny from Diamond Valley Lake on the line for us. So why don't you give us a quick information about 976 TuneIn, and we appreciate you coming on.
We cover from Cabo San Lucas to the Channel Islands every day. We have daily updates on 976tuna.com. Stop on by.
Okay, thanks, Terrence. Okay, let's go ahead and get Tawny from Diamond Valley on and get a quick report from Diamond Valley Lake. Tawny, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, hey, sorry about that. We were talking about that big Mako shark, and we forgot what time it was. So give us a quick idea what's happening up at Diamond Valley.
Fishing has been picking up. It's been really nice weather, but the striper has been biting just really well this past week.
Okay. Now, Diamond Valley is kind of a special place, a special lake, because it's not that old, but when it was built, it was created primarily, of course, you know, it was to hold the water. But when they did it with a dual purpose. They wanted to make a recreational lake out of it. And because of that, they certainly did the right thing and put the right amount of structure in there and introduced the right kind of fish.
Yes, they did.
Okay. Do you ever get a chance to get out?
Sometimes. I haven't in a while, a long time. Last I was out was probably November, and I was catching trout.
Okay. Well, trout's, is primarily. Not but, bad. Of course, when there's trout in there, there's a lot of other fish that like to eat trout. But give
like
us
striper.
Yeah. Oh, those are so much fun.
Tawny, considering our rainfall, how's the water level there at the lake?
It is actually decreasing only because the Metropolitan Water District has been taking water out the past couple of months.
Okay.
But I'm not sure when they're going to put water back in. We never really know until a fisherman lets us know because striper will start biting once the water's being put in. And people will just go out by the inlet outlet tower and start fishing. Mm-hmm. And then once they start catching striper, then we know the water's coming in.
There you go. Well, Diamond Valley is very close to the Los Angeles metropolitan area. So people that are, you know, on vacation, traveling around, and they happen to get to Southern California, I would certainly recommend that they stop up there. And let's just say they're cruising around and they don't have fishing gear and they don't have a boat. Can they come and see you?
Yes, we rent boats here. You can go shoreline fishing. We're going to start renting bikes soon.
Cool.
So they can go bike riding.
Okay. Well, let's get some contact information for you for people that are interested, and we'll cover up with that.
All right. Our phone number here is 951-926-7201. You can also go online to dvmarina.com.
DV for Diamond Valley, dvmarina.com. Okay, thank you, Tawny. We really appreciate that, and we'll be talking to you again real soon. And good luck up there, and have a great week.
All righty. Thanks.
Okay, you're listening to Fish Talk Radio, and we're going to be right back from Cabo San Lucas.
West Marine covers Southern California with convenient locations for all your boating and fishing needs. The new superstore on Shelter Island in San Diego, nearly a block in length, has West Marine's largest saltwater fishing selection on the West Coast. This is the world's largest marine store, located one block from Shelter Island Drive at 1250 Rosecrans. Not only stocked to the gills, the staff has selected fishing experts in what to buy, plus how and where to use it. For boating, fishing, and water sports, this is the ultimate. West Marine.
Set on the magnificent Sea of Cortez, the Grand Heritage Resort and Spa at Marina Costa Baja is the first five-star resort in La Paz, Baja South. Overlooking a 250-slip marina and white sand beaches, enjoy two signature restaurants, a world-class destination for fishing or diving. Enjoy five-star elegance in the charming laid-back city of La Paz. Dock your boat and enjoy the Marina Village. Visit on the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
Goldfish, muskie, rainbow, brook trout, brown trout, steelhead, catfish, dogfish, wolfish, bullhead, halibut, egg.
Back to Fish Talk Radio. We've got Ramon from the Finisterre five-star resort in downtown Cabo San Lucas calling in. We had to call back, but sometimes calling in can be a little bit of a frustration. So we're going to go ahead and start and bring him in. Oh, there he is. Right. We're going to bring him in as soon as we get him on the line. And, Mike, we're just talking about the Finisterre. It is one of the original. I don't know what year it was built, but I know that the Solmar, which down at the end, of course, it looks a little different now, and the Finisterre were on the, you know, the beach that, and you said, you leave the harbor, you make a right turn, and that's how you get to the beach. and big undertow, but right in front, I know multiple times when the marlin were only a few hundred yards offshore. There's a there's a deep trench which causes a lot of swell to go through there, so you don't want to go swimming in it because of the undertow. But
yeah, I know that's a little bit of a problem there.
It's a hotel.
As soon as you get around the corner, those beaches are tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's got, but one of the reasons that Cabo San Lucas is so well known, there's more striped marlin caught and released in Cabo San Lucas than anywhere in the world, is because of that deep water trench that flows right by there. And it kind of connects the Sea of Cortez to the Pacific. And marlin like to travel in deep water.
Boy, you know, it's always impressive, John, when we hear those reports. I always remember the one Minerva gave us where they couldn't keep the marlin off the hook. There were so many fish, and they just stayed on and kept biting the whole works. And we would really like to hear from Ramon if we get a chance.
Okay. Well, we will. Yeah, we're just talking to him.
John, you were just down there not too long ago. Or...
Yeah, it's only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And what did you experience there?
Well, what I did is I went down to Cabo, and if anybody's interested in going down there, they definitely need to get in touch with me because I've got a condo down there, and we can take good care of them.
Yeah. And that's right in the middle of things down there, isn't it, John, that condo of yours?
Yeah. I mean,
it's where you want to be and when you're in Cabo.
So if anybody's interested, just get in touch with me and I'll fix you up. But anyway, I did go down, and we talked about it last week. We went to fished out of La Paz, or up to went up to Loreto and caught the yellowtail. And it's true what they say about there's a reason that they consider Loreto as the yellowtail capital. Man, that was I never told you about that trip.
Yeah, well, you know what? You did tell me one thing that stuck in my mind is a 50-pound yellow.
Yeah.
Or 49.
I'll tell you what. You drop it down there, and they grab hold of that. I had both hands on the rod, and I was worried about getting pulled over the boat. They might be 50 pounds, but they seem to be, you know, even more.
If you've ever caught a 20 or even a 30-pound yellowtail and somebody tells you about a 50, you know what they're talking about. And I mean, you hang a 20-pounder, and you got your hands full.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care kind of gear you have.
Yeah, someone was telling me about they hooked into a yellow, and it was, you know, they went around the boat three times. And we finally got it up and found it was only 10 pounds. They go, oh, man, that's a fighting fish.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that yellowtail are popping up, and it's looking good for those people who live in the southern part of the state, and especially down there in Cabo. But they're coming up. They like that warmer water. And I just can't get that out of my mind, a 50-pounder. I've seen those guys cruising at Catalina Island in that clear blue water, those big, giant yellows that don't bite. I mean,
well, yeah, isn't that the truth?
Fortunately, the truth? I think, really. Hey. And, of course, the thing that down there, the most consistent, I guess, John, is probably Dorado. Huh? I mean, you can pretty much count on Dorado. They'll hang around. I know that. And, in fact, a guy that was just down there hung a 60-pound Dorado, and that, too, is a handful. And those guys with the big flatheads, boy, they get turned sideways, and that's it.
I mean, okay. Well, we're gonna try and get in touch with Ramon. But if in case he can't get through, we're having some internal problems with our telephone. It's not his fault. Is the Finisterre has just been taken over by Sandos, not Sandals, but Sandos, which is an international resort, and it is high end. It's the first all inclusive, but you know, it's not cheap, but it is worth every penny. And not only that, is when you check in, you know, you can leave your wallet in the airplane if you need to. I mean, everything, all your drinks, all your meals, everything is included. And they'll take care of your fish for you. You can just walk down the hill to the marina, get on the boat, and go out. And, of course, we'll help you get some hook up with your fish, too.
And from all I've heard, John, it is five-star service.
Finisterre has always been well known, but when Sandoz took it over, they turned it into, they spent millions of dollars and turned it into something that's honestly world class.
And I know that it goes back to the time when things were just getting started down there, where there weren't very many hotels.
Yeah, they were one of the original three on the, on the beach down there. There was Hacienda, Solmar, and Finisterre, and that would have been back probably into the 60s. And, of course, the rest of Cabo has changed a little bit since then.
Some of us even know what was going on in the 50s and 60s.
Okay. Anyway, who do we have? Talk to me. What, Mike? Okay, well, you know what? We're going to jump up to Alaska right now, and I think that we have Michael Briggs from Clover Pass Resort, who's up there right now and been out fishing already today. So, Michael, give us an idea about fishing in Alaska.
Well, John, right now what we'd be fishing for is king salmon. In fact, 2 weeks ago, the Ketchikan King Salmon Derby got underway. I was the fortunate soul who caught the very first fish of the whole derby, a 28.3-pound king. It's since been surpassed by a number of other fish. I'm down to number 22 on the ladder at this point. But
well, Michael, this is Mike Maropas. I've been up there several times with John. The thing I remember is that we're kind of at the end of the king season now coming up, and pretty soon the silvers will start sneaking in there. Is that what we can expect?
Yeah, usually you see the kings start to taper off right around the 1st of July, 4th of July, right in that ballpark. As those fish start to taper off, the silvers, the pinks, the chums, the sockeye, all the other species of Pacific salmon start moving into the water at that point. But we've already had a couple silvers caught as well. One of our manager out at Clover Pass went out fishing for the derby as well. And he did not get a king, but he did come back with a really nice coho. Yeah.
You're still running your skiffs, right?
Well, in this instance, we're running the 20-foot yellow boats, which is what John's got on his package when he brings up the fun crew in July.
We'll keep them on the line.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed that that program of taking your own boat out and doing it when you want to do it, you know, and not having to be someplace again.
Well, Mike, I'd love to invite you up to our trip coming up next month in July up to Clover Pass, but unfortunately you didn't get your reservation in time, and we're booked up. Michael, by the way, you've done a tremendous job filling that place up. It looks like the economy's kind of coming back a little bit, but you guys have done a tremendous job up there. You've got, what, 32 rooms? And, you know, we had to beg for get a couple extra rooms to bring our crew up.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a phenomenal year, and, you know, doing all the shows like the Fred Hall Show down in Long Beach, and we sold a ton of trips, and honestly, I just got word a couple of days ago that this is, thus far, this is our best year on record. So
that's great to hear.
Since the family picked up the resort in 2003. So.
You know, as an outdoor writer, I don't do a lot of endorsements, but that's one of the endorsements that I personally recommend. I've been there to Clover Pass several times. I just think it's a great show, and I really enjoy. I like the casual idea. The place is clean. Your staff is great. They just do such a good job. And like I said, that's a personal endorsement, but. That's a good show. You guys do great. And I'm glad to hear you're having a good year right now. That's a good start.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've always said it's just a magical place. I mean, you wake up in the morning, you got that view from the dock and just calm waters and tons of fish jumping. And it's just a wonderful place to fish.
Well, you mentioned that. And, you know, I don't want to brag on Clover Pass too much, but the water out in front is literally, I mean, there's a lot of great fishing in Alaska, but when you get up and look at the water, I guess you're looking, is it north is when you look out of the, but anyway, you're on the Inland Passage, and no matter what's happened out in the open ocean 40, 50 miles away, it really is. It's a mirror. It's like a lake. And, you know, and it's a thoroughfare for the different species of salmon to come cruising through. And we'll give a report about it, I guess, after we come back in July. And if there's any, hopefully I get to go fishing with you.
Oh, for sure. You know I'm taking you out.
Now,
John, you spoiled me. I remember the first trip I went up there with you. We caught like four or five different species of salmon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in that one trip, in our own skiff.
Yep.
And they were decent fish. Wasn't like there were a whole bunch of little tiny fish.
Oh, yeah.
They were real ones.
Yeah, well, the thing is that if you're, if you want to hang around or go into town, that's fine. But if you're really serious, you can go out and fish, from 6 in the morning till 7 at night, Mike?
Yeah.
Oh, at least that, if not more. I mean, honestly, if the sun's up, you're free to take the boat and go out. So even though our office doesn't open until 6 in the morning, a lot of guests will get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock and hit the water. And then the sun doesn't go down at that time of the year till almost 10 o'clock. So,
yeah. Of course, what's nice is
like
you can
come
in
back
and eat.
And check in, but you can go back out right in front of the lodge until 9
or
10.
Hey, Mike, we got to go. Go to fishtalkradio.com and click on Clover Pass Resort and just get up there and give Michael a call.
Fantastic. Thanks,
John. Thanks. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in.